to is the author of 19 books, including the 5-volume series, The Portable Queer. Her new must-read book, The L-Life, chronicles the lives of 26 lesbian game changers in America, including Jane Lynch, Kate Clinton, and Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin. Hi, Erin.
Hello, Charlotte.
How are you?
I'm good. Long time no see.
Yeah, really. Tell us about The L-Life.
I was having lunch with the president of Abrams Books, somebody I'd worked with before, and just having a sandwich, and he said, how would you like to write a book about lesbians for us? And I said, yes, I would. And he said, well, what do you think it would be? I really stunned. I said, I really don't know. Let me go home and think about it. But truthfully, by the time I got off the subway, I think I knew that I wanted The L-Life to be a tribute book. I wanted to getting all these women together, people who have really made a difference in our lives, in the world, in the way the, as you say, the game has changed. And they said, yes, that sounds like a great idea. So I set about going around the country for about a year, dragging a photographer, the yin to my yang, a woman named Jennifer May, and we interviewed all these incredible people.
What was your inspiration in writing the book?
I wanted to include people that everybody knew and some people that nobody knew. One of the premier urban farmers in Philadelphia, a woman named Mary Seton Corboy, and how she's changed that city and really the whole urban farming world. A great, great woman who is the sheriff of Dallas County, whose name is Lupe Valdez. She's got something like 3,000 deputies working for her, and she is a tiny Latina woman, and most of her deputies are about 6'3", with a mustache and sunglasses. So it's a great feminist moment when you see her with these people and them all yes-ma'aming her. It is somebody like Rabbi Sharon Kleinbaum, who runs the largest LGBT congregation synagogue in the world, and she lives in the West Village in New York, so we're all over the place.
How did you go about to get some of these people to participate?
Actually, the setting of these sort of, as I call it, the account executive part of writing the book, getting everybody organized, if two people were in the same part of the country, trying to get there, you know, in the same trip, going through people's assistance was, you know, I can't make it today at the last minute, that kind of thing. That was the hardest part. It was actually when you get in the room and see these people, I was always overprepared with pages and pages of questions. But it seemed like really there were only two or three questions that opened up everybody's story, and then they were off.
It was interesting to get the more personal insight about them, and I just couldn't stop reading it. It was sort of like, oh my God, I didn't know that.
That's great. That's what I want to hear. Thank you. Well, it was funny. I had never interviewed anybody before, as I said, after I signed the contract to my publisher. And she said, what? You never told me that. And I said, well, why would I? So off I went. And as I said, I was so nervous all the time. I mean, interviewing somebody like the great Phyllis Lyon, who's in her 80s, who, with her partner Del Martin, started the Daughters of Bilitis in the mid-50s. Ann Bannon, who wrote the wonderful Bebo Brinker lesbian pulp fiction novels in the 50s and 60s. These were goddesses to me. But I was start interviewing them and try, as I say, to do my homework the best I could and find out if I could about them before I went there. And then I would get there, and every once in a while you'd hear something that, no matter how much homework I'd done, I had not run across before, and I'd think, oh, here we go. This is an interview. This is the great part. When I heard that Susan Love, for example, Dr. Susan Love, was a nun, I hadn't known that. So there was always a surprise around the corner, which was terrific.
Is there an interview that really stands out to you that was kind of a changing moment for yourself?
You know, I have to say that many of them were like that to me. I would say the interview with Lupe Valdez, hearing about in Dallas again, hearing how she was a pea picker with her huge immigrant family when she was 3 years old, and all she went through to get to where she was and what her family had been through. You know, just like little nuggets like that. To hear about somebody like Lisa Vogel, who's been running the Michigan Women's Music Festival for, well, this will be year number 36, and she was like a really bad girl. When she was 16, she was a drug dealer and had a secret apartment all her own. That her parents didn't even know about, where she just partied and sold drugs and whatever. People's lives, we're so used to hearing how they are today in the press. Tammy Baldwin talks about what it was like to be a girl at Smith College, you know, which we all think of as such a haven for dykes. But now to hear people's backstories, to hear any story, is always moving to me.
What is your personal commitment to LGBT civil rights?
Well, I started as a volunteer at GMHC in the mid-80s, and that was my first sort of brush with getting involved with the movement. And then in the early 90s, I was one of the very first founding members of the board of directors of the Empire State Pride Agenda, which is the New York State very powerful PAC and lobby, which just celebrated our 20th anniversary. So I spent many, many, many years with them, many years at the Stonewall Community Foundation. And then I started writing about the movement and, as you said, the Port of the five-volume Portable Queers. And this book, which I'm very proud of, is, and now I'm sort of going around the country talking about it and telling the stories in my own way at the moment. That's my involvement with the movement, telling the stories.
Do you think that Obama's doing a good job for LGBT community?
You know, I think he's moving things forward. When I think, again, of being involved in the movement the last 25 years, I would like to see a little more forward movement from him. I think he's getting a lot of accolades for stuff that hasn't come all the way through yet, the Defense of Marriage Act that he has decided not to appeal to the decision. It seems like not exactly moving something forward, but for stopping something bad.
What would you like to see happen for our LGBT civil rights in 2011?
I think in my world here, I live in Manhattan, we've had such a hard time moving the marriage in New York State. We've got, again, another round of hope with Governor Cuomo, and we'll hope that it happens in this next year or two. But it's been quite a great disappointment. I'm from Massachusetts myself, so that seems like, you know, I don't know why we can't catch up with my home state.
What do you think about, you know, LGBTQ teens being four times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers? And over the past year, you know, numerous teens have taken their own lives facing bullying incidents. What advice would you have for these kids?
We've had a lot of problems, as you know, in New York City over the last several months, over the last year, with bullying and gay teens that has been heartbreaking for the community. In fact, we have a ad campaign now, sort of PSAs around town, with Chris Quinn, who's in the book, being the speaker, the city council speaker, is doing the voiceovers, and with a tagline that says, love, love, hate, hate, which is nice for the whole world to see. But really, I look to one of the interviews I did to the in the book with the Ziff sisters talking, Amy and Elizabeth Ziff, who are part of the rock group Betty, and what their advice is, of course, is try to find a, well, what seems like a grown-up to you, who is on your side, who is always going to stay by you, who understands you. It doesn't have to be a parent. It doesn't have to be an aunt or uncle, but somebody that you feel you can trust. I'm hoping that my book, The L Life, is helping a little one girl who got kicked out of her house as a teen because her family were Jehovah's Witnesses, and they thought that they would rather see her not alive at all rather than be a lesbian. But, you know, when you look at this book and you see these women, every page tells you that it's going to get better. You know, we've all got it within ourselves to move things forward.
How can people get information about the L Life?
Well, it's in a lot of bookstores right now. It's on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com, and as I say, at all your independent bookstores.
What are you working on now?
Now I'm working on another book for Abrams. That is called One Good Deed. I am doing a good deed every day for a year and chronicling it. So I've got a blog up at www.onegooddeedbook.com, not just One Good Deed, but onegooddeedbook.com, because the book will come out next year. So every 3 or 4 days, I post one of the good deeds that I'm doing, and the rest, of course, I'm working on for the book. And it's been a lot of fun. And it changes you a little. You wake up in the morning and you start thinking, what can I do today for somebody? Which is not a bad way to start the day or end the day.
Is there a question you wish people would ask you?
When I go around talking about the L Life, people want to know what the journey was like, and I'm happy to tell them, like I'm telling you now. You know, people want to be told a story. That's the eternal question. They want to be informed and entertained at the same time. And I find it thrilling every time somebody says to me, tell me a little bit more about these women.
It's a beautiful book, and it's sort of a coffee table book. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to have on your table and to flip through and check out these women's stories, and the photos are really nice.
Thank you. I'm very proud, I have to say. Abrams, my publisher, did a beautiful, beautiful job.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through times like this?
One of my favorites that I was thinking about the other day from the book was one from Harvey Milk that is, hope will never be silent. I tend to be optimistic myself, and every time my optimism is dashed somehow, it rises again. I also like to think of a comment that Jane Lynch made when we were speaking in the book. She says she hopes that by the time her life is over, that being gay or lesbian is about as odd as being left-handed.